This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's radio. Free.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
2 years ago, at the height of the global food crisis, the Canadian Parliament passed the Renewable Fuels Bill. The bill gave the federal government the mandate to develop and implement new regulations to require a minimum amount of renewable content in gasoline, diesel, and heating oil. Starting this year in December, gasoline will be required to contain a minimum 5% of renewable content. Renewable fuels, also known as bio or agrofuels, are widely celebrated as a green alternative to fossil fuels. However, there are serious concerns about their impacts on the environment and people. Lucy Sherratt is the coordinator of the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network, and she joins us on the phone from Ottawa. Hello, Lucy.
Hello.
So when the federal government talks about renewable content in fuels, what types of renewable fuels are they referring to?
Well, they're referring to, at the moment, ethanol, certainly for this 5% that we'll see next year. And this comes, at the moment, from corn and then also biodiesel, which would be canola and soy, which is sort of the second phase of this renewable energy idea for fuel, is that in 2012, 2% of heating oil and fuel would also come from biodiesel. But at the moment, this ethanol is coming from corn.
And what has motivated the government to implement the new renewable fuel regulations?
Well, certainly the Conservative government was saying that this would be a huge boon for farmers, and so it certainly seemed to be a strong part of their farm policy. But of course, they also said that it would be part of their policy to address climate change. And of course, we know that the Conservative government has been doing very little to address climate change. And I think that they saw in 2006, when they first started talking about these regulations, that this would be a win-win situation where they would be able to put forward some kind of environmental solution to climate change that would also be helpful for rural Canada or farming Canada. As it turns out, on both counts, both economically and environmentally, biofuels have been highly criticized. There are huge problems on both accounts.
So this has less to do about climate change and more to do about helping out big business, is that right?
Well, certainly it has very little to do with stopping climate change, and we can see that not just by looking at the Conservatives' policies generally, but at the consistent way that the government has rushed through these regulations for a percentage, well, 5% of our gasoline, without actually knowing where that 5% is coming from, where it will come from, where will this ethanol come from, how will it be grown, and what does that mean ecologically. In fact, the Conservative government earlier this year had commissioned a study inside Environment Canada that in the end they refused to release, which was a study to look at the ecological footprint. So the Conservative government, and that study came out and said, well, really, it's very hard to tell what the ecological footprint of biofuels plants are. They measure their impact really differently. And the Conservative government actually refused to release that study, and it was found through access to information. So we can see that actually the government's not been even looking at the question of really what the ecological impact is. And if we were to do that, I think we'd see domestically and internationally that biofuels in actuality are speeding us towards climate change.
Well, I guess that brings us to another question. Where will these, where will the agrofuels come from that we are going to use in Canada?
It's actually very confusing for people in Canada and across the world, because corporations are saying that they can and will supply biofuels with all kinds of feedstocks, the actual crops or plant matter, and different kinds of technologies and processes. So just like we saw with, you know, the promises, industrial promises for genetic engineering, you know, these fantastical ideas of what could be achieved with technology, we haven't seen those happen. And biofuels is the same, where we see the same corporations. Actually, we see here big oil, agribusiness, and the biotechnology industry together, huge corporate interests that are ready to sell the idea anyway, whether it become reality or not, of biofuels, so that they can then start developing, you know, new crazy technologies and find an application for them. But in reality, at the moment, it's corn ethanol that is, you know, going to be fueling our cars. And even this year, the estimation is that one-third of the U.S. corn crop will go to ethanol. And, of course, as we saw in 2008, this has huge implications for the world's food supply.
And what has this increased focus on agrofuels meant for farmers here in Canada?
Well, actually, it's been really difficult for farmers in Canada because they've been sold the idea of biofuels as an economic advantage. And in fact, the Conservative government was appealing to farmers to invest in biofuels plants. But this is a new technology, and these are not necessarily sound economic investments for farmers. And there are wild fluctuations in the prices of these commodities. And so farmers, you know, haven't necessarily been seeing the benefits. And in fact, the government's own cost-benefit analysis that was issued when they put these regulations out said that there would be very marginal beneficial impact on the primary agricultural sector.
Okay, I want to shift the focus from Canada to a larger scale picture. What are the main concerns with agrofuel production globally?
Well, because these are agrofuels, they're crops that are being grown in monoculture industrial plantations, palm oil, for example, or corn and canola and soy. Certainly with the life cycle of corn, it's, you know, there's consensus that this does not cut greenhouse emissions. But when we look at the global picture for monocultural agriculture, we see a huge amount of water use, increased use of fertilizers and pesticides, and certainly with crops like corn and soy, it's genetically engineered seeds that are used, which are, of course, are patented and owned by Monsanto. And one huge implication that's not necessarily calculated in life cycle analysis of biofuels is the problem of land conversion, where you see, for example, if Brazil is expanding their sugarcane plantations into what used to be forested areas, or if they move their production into sugarcane and soy production moves into Argentina or expands production in another country, you have this movement across the world of land into agricultural production. That means habitat loss, biodiversity loss, and a huge risk for endangered species. And one of the other implications of this is that for people who live in forests or indigenous peoples who live on lands that are, you know, literally in across the world in countries and communities, governments and companies are forcibly removing people from land that they farm or hunt in or use as pasture land to take that land over for agrofuel production.
And can you give me an example? Where is this happening?
Well, the largest cause of deforestation in Southeast Asia now is palm oil plantations, the use of agrofuels for palm oil plantations. And this is happening in Indonesia, in Colombia, in many countries where, you know, there's not the type of transparency or accountability that we would hope for, and governments are just able to take the land from people who are already marginalized.
Okay, now I understand that the industry is moving towards a so-called second generation of biofuel technology. First of all, what's new about these new technologies?
Well, the industry says that, of course, any problems that already exist with, you know, corn ethanol, for example, any problem that we can identify, they will resolve with a new technology. And they are, for example, saying that they could genetically engineer crops that would be easy to convert into a biofuel, so it would take less water, for example, or something like this. And these, I mean, it's important to know that these technologies do not yet exist. This hasn't been done yet, these new crops or these new enzymes to process the crops into biofuels. They don't exist yet, but so they are promises that may or may not come true. If they do come true, there's a whole other set of, you know, environmental questions or risk questions And that's because these technologies would be genetically engineered crops or the use of synthetic biology to produce enzymes. And with a rush from these major industrial sectors to bring, you know, technologies that they can sell onto market, like we see with genetically engineered crops, you know, the risk questions are marginalized. And if we see the world's lands being used for the production of biomass for food and for fuel, this is a huge boon for any company that can develop a technology that's hooked into that production.
But, and we don't really know what the results of that technology is going to be then?
No, absolutely not. There's no way we can see what the so-called second and third generation biofuels will look like. For example, the biotech industry 15 years ago said that they would produce crops with increased nutritional qualities, all of these promises for super crops, and none of that has come true. There's only two different types of genetically engineered crops on the market, and none of them have, for example, nutritional benefits. So any time that an industry says that they can resolve problems with a future technology, that should be taken with a grain of salt.
Well, thanks so much, Lucy, for shedding some light on this issue for us today.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking with Lucy Sherratt, coordinator of the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network, CBAN. To learn more about the environmental and social impacts of agrofuels, you can go to their website at cban.ca.